I think as individuals learn more about and become familiar with a public health approach to substance use, they're more inclined to be open to the solutions and ideas that not only aim to treat individuals with humanity and empathy, even if they are using substances, but in turn, it can make their communities safer and healthier.
Hi, this is Ike Evans of the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health, and you are listening to Into the Fold, Issues in Mental Health. The Hogg Foundation is a strategic grant maker based at the University of Texas at Austin. To learn more, visit us at hogg.utexas.edu. The substance use epidemic is devastating communities across Texas and the country. The Hogg Foundation believes that all individuals, regardless of geography, specific substances used, or finances, should have an equal opportunity for recovery. The implications for mental health and well-being couldn't be more profound. Expanding access to treatment is just one piece of the puzzle. Equally important is to adopt a public health systems approach, one that emphasizes prevention and a broad spectrum of programs and policies that enhance the overall well-being of the community, including those with substance use issues. We've talked about one important aspect of a public health approach on the podcast, to make recovery-oriented principles a centerpiece of the systems and services we design for people. Jason Howell, director of Recovery People, a statewide peer recovery community, appeared on episode 51 to share his own story of recovery from substance use, while also educating us on what it means to build social enterprises with recovery-oriented principles at their foundation.
It's really a lifestyle change. It's a paradigm change. I've oftentimes heard people describe it about transplanting yourself from a culture and lifestyle of addiction into a culture and lifestyle of recovery. And I know that for me, when I was in active addiction and somebody would talk about recovery or abstinence, I was like, what are you talking about? How can you even function? I could not visualize what that would look like, mm-hmm. Or even have the hope of that could be me. And I think that's why connecting individuals with people who've walked that path, who are living recovery, who are reflecting recovery principles, is so key.
The Texas legislature is taking a fresh look at the issue. Last November, the House Select Committee on Opioids and Substance Use released its interim recommendations to the 86th legislature. The committee held 6 hearings and took testimony from stakeholders from around the state and the nation. It appears to be starting the conversation for what is needed for a comprehensive overhaul of Texas's approach to substance use. Shannon Hoffman is a policy fellow here at the Hogg Foundation and an expert on substance use policy. She is here to help us break down this broad and complex area of policy and help us understand why Texans may have cause for optimism this session. Shannon, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be having this discussion.
Because substance use is such a pervasive problem that affects many different systems, is there any data that might help give listeners an idea of the scope of the problem, even if it doesn't capture the full complexity?
You're right. Substance use and the issues that often accompany it can be seen across a number of systems. And not only can it be seen, but the numbers are pretty staggering. Strictly discussing overarching numbers, it's estimated there's close to 2 million Texans living with a substance use disorder. When there aren't adequate number of providers or programs in the community, the issue of underinsured and uninsured always comes up. And when medical professionals or police aren't properly educated or trained, or when laws don't encourage or protect those who seek medical help, often substance use is treated in the most expensive and least appropriate settings. And just for a couple of data points, when we look at the issue of substance use and the cost to our healthcare system, drug-related emergency room visits increased 99% from 2005 to 2014. And in Texas specifically, to opioid abuse, healthcare costs topped $1.9 billion. That was just in our state, and that was just for opiates, which is the second highest in the country. Another system that substance use is often seen is through the criminal justice system. In 2016, a quarter of all Texas arrests were related for possession and driving under the influence, which is a staggering number. And Texas county jails estimate that a quarter of their population are struggling in some capacity with mental illness and co-occurring substance use. And we know that for every dollar invested in treatment, there's a $4 to $7 return as it relates to reducing drug-related crime and criminal justice costs, which when that does relate to healthcare, that's a ratio of 12 to 1, which is a huge cost savings. And I think most importantly is the loss of human life. Overdose is the leading cause of maternal mortality, with moms often losing their lives to overdose following their 60th day, often after the 60th day of when they lose their Medicaid coverage. And in 2017, 3,000 Texans lost their lives to an overdose. And so that's just some really quick data points kind of the overarching issue of substance use across our systems.
So I mentioned the Select Committee report. Going through it, I was struck by how open the committee seems to be to public health approaches such as harm reduction, which is a phrase I'm hearing. For our listeners, what is harm reduction?
Well, as you mentioned in the introduction, all individuals should have an opportunity for recovery, and all individuals should be included when we do discuss community well-being and community wellness. All individuals, whether they're using substances, if not more so, should be included in that conversation. And so I think a good definition that's provided by the National Harm Reduction Coalition defines harm reduction as a set of practical strategies and ideas aimed at reducing negative consequences associated with drug use. It's built on a belief and a respect for the rights of all individuals who may or may not be using substances. You know, harm reduction incorporates a spectrum of strategies, so it could vary between an abstinence program to meeting where an individual, quote unquote, meeting them where they're at. It's essentially reducing the impact of someone while they're using substances, but also improving their quality of life. It's not condoning drug use. It's understanding someone's battling a fight potentially for their lives. And if there's a solution to potentially ease some of that battle and in turn help the community in which they're living, why not?
My sense has always been that harm reduction faces an uphill battle in a conservative state like ours. Is the ground on this finally beginning to shift, or was my original assumption incorrect?
I think as individuals learn more about and become familiar with a public health approach to substance use, they're more inclined to be open to the solutions and ideas that not only aim to treat individuals with humanity and empathy, even if they are using substances, but in turn, it can make their communities safer and healthier. I think there is a lot of misinformation and misconceptions as it pertains to addressing substance use through a public health approach. I have hope and I'm optimistic that we are moving in a more understanding direction. We know that there are programs like a syringe service program that allow the exchange of needles, which not only saves lives and addresses potential fatal communicable diseases, but it also can help reduce needle sticks in first responders, can help our policemen and women and medical professionals, not to mention they are cost effective. And these programs are comprehensive reduction services, harm reduction services, and can provide so much more like testing, education. And this data also shows that increase in drug use and intravenous drug use does not increase. Texas and 10 states don't currently have one of these programs because of potential legal consequences, but they're increasing across the country, which is also really encouraging for our state to move that way too.
Of the dozens of recommendations in the interim committee report, which do you think are especially significant and why?
I think the recommendations that address preventative measures for both use and overdoses were especially significant. I think it's equally important to try and avert first-time use and the potential progression to a substance use disorder, but also prevent deaths that are avoidable. Some of the specific recommendations that stood out to me were increasing the availability of and access to naloxone, the provision of education and evidence-based prevention programs in middle schools and high schools across the state. There was a recommendation to enact Good Samaritan legislation to provide basic legal protections to those who assist a person who is going through an overdose or themselves experiencing an overdose. I think more recommendations addressing access to timely, affordable, and appropriate services was a missed opportunity. There was an identified challenge of access to substance use service in both availability, location, waiting lists, and insurance coverage, but there weren't any concrete or directive recommendations for solutions to those huge pervasive problems. There was also a mention of the large number of substance use services that are funded through our 1115 waiver, and those funds are going to taper down and be finished by 2021, and I think that was also an opportunity that was missed for some recommendations that I think we're going to see in the future that may become an issue. There was one recommendation that did relate to access by addressing providers, and the recommendation stated that we are needing to address funding rates for service facilities because that will address capacity in order to provide treatment in more places across the state and address wait lists.
Shannon, it seems that apart from any particular recommendation, there are a lot of people who are just open to the idea that treatment and prevention are better than criminal justice involvement. Can you provide an example that helps to illustrate that difference, to make it more vividly real to people?
Sure. I think that we have come to a consensus mostly across the country that the war on drugs didn't work and that we are becoming more open to looking at evidence-based practices across all the intercepts that someone could potentially come into contact with the criminal justice system. You know, different things like diverting individuals away from the criminal justice system in the first place. An example is pre-arrest diversion, where it promotes someone having access to community-based services rather than someone being arrested in jail for low-level, nonviolent possession charges. We see when these types of strategies are implemented, like where it started in Seattle, that individuals that did complete the program were 58% less likely to be arrested. And so it was a huge drop in recidivism across the state. An example that can not only keep someone out of the criminal justice system, but save a life are Good Samaritan laws. And they do vary. They can provide immunity from arrest, charge, or prosecution for low-level, small amounts of controlled substances and potentially possession if the person calls 911 for themselves or for someone else. So, like I said, not only does this save lives, but it keeps these individuals who are open to calling 911 because they no longer have the fear of being arrested for someone who's experiencing an overdose. You know, Texas is one of 10 states that doesn't have any type of Good Samaritan laws as it relates to overdoses. And we see in other states that have enacted these laws that as it relates to opioid-related overdose deaths, that it drops by 15% across all demographics, but more so in the African-American population by 26% and Hispanic populations by 16%. And unfortunately, I am close with someone who was in a situation where they experienced an overdose. And because there were their quote-unquote friends were aware that they could be arrested if the police came, instead of calling 911 for emergency interaction and emergency help, that they dropped this person off in front of a hospital on the sidewalk after they experienced an overdose. And so if there potentially had been protections, those people may have been more inclined to call 911 and gotten immediate medical attention.
Okay. So you mentioned someone close to you for whom you feel that Good Samaritan laws may have made a difference. Did that experience play any part in you becoming so woke on this particular issue?
Thank you. I'm woke. yeah, absolutely. I think having firsthand experience, how seeing the lack of something, the gap in the system that could have potentially led to someone's life being lost, was hugely impactful. And I think becoming involved professionally and really wanting to focus on this issue was largely due to that.
Okay. It seems, Shannon, that the opioid crisis has brought about a change in the tone of discussion about substance use compared to previous drug epidemics. But that discussion has largely bypassed Texas. What does substance use look like in our state versus the rest of the country?
Yeah, you're right. As far as in here in Texas, the current data doesn't show that our state has been affected as much by opioids as other states. Even though 3,000 people have lost their lives to overdoses last year, and Texas is home to four of the country's top 25 cities with the highest rate of opioid use, we currently have more child removals, arrests, and deaths across our state due to methamphetamine and alcohol. I think that this conversation nationally has been brought up to the forefront because of the high mortality rate. However, substance use and subsequent overdoses have been a pretty prevalent issue across our country, our state, and various systems for quite a while. I think the tone and attentiveness has changed because this particular substance has affected all individuals, regardless of race, gender, socioeconomic status, profession, etc. Prescription opioids have pretty distinctly affected middle and upper class white suburban America and is now responsible for the leading cause of death among new moms. So I think as it's happening in more people's backyards, it's more difficult to ignore. And I think it's affecting more people, and more people are affected and seeing the devastation of substance use and the issues that accompany it.
How optimistic are you that there might be major movement on any of the interim recommendations? And what legislative developments do you think people should be tracking?
I think that while there are a lot of opportunities for more individuals to be better educated on substance use, seeing some legislation that has already been filed in this session, the previous Speaker of the House, Speaker Strauss, appointing a select committee on opioids and substance use disorder, which was great and great attention to the issue. The work that during that committee that Chairman Price and the remainder of the committee did, the work that Health and Human Services is doing, I'm hopeful that our state is going to move in a more progressive and understanding space that works to improve access to affordable and appropriate care, but also working to mitigate the stigma that has for so long been surrounded. And so legislative developments, there's quite a few. So I'll try not to list too many, but there are a few that directly address a more public health approach, like Representative Menjarez's House Bill 75, Representative Rose's House Bill 746, Senator Watson's Senate Bill 305, and Senator Huffman's Senate Bill 340. There are some bills addressing substance use education and services in school, which is such a great preventative measure to address kids before it can potentially evolve into an issue. And Senator Nelson has also filed a bill, Senate 435.
Are there good resources for non-experts who want to become more informed on this issue?
Sure. There's quite a few, and some of the ones that I use, I'll share. SAMHSA and the National Institute on Drug Abuse has a lot of great research resources. The Center for Public Policy Priorities does great policy briefs, especially around Medicaid, which can be a very tricky and convoluted system. NAMI and Recovery People have great resources if someone's looking for information around criminal justice and the intersection with substance use. The Texas Coalition on Criminal Justice and Texas Public Policy Foundation have really great resources and information. And shameless plug, the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health's Guide.
Well, yes. Yeah, I was about to do more shameless plugging in my outro, so, but thanks for that.
Yeah.
That's it for this episode. You can find links to other substance use related episodes in the description for this one. And speaking of policy and the legislative session, be sure to check out the latest edition of A Guide to Understanding Mental Health Systems and Services in Texas. Shannon referred to it as the Mental Health Guide. That's its full name. It's our one-of-a-kind comprehensive guide to the Texas mental health system. It is intended for policymakers, state agency staff, and mental health consumers and their families. It is available on our website at hogg.utexas.edu. And I have provided a link to the guide in the description for this episode. Finally, if you want more news related to topics under consideration during the legislative session, don't miss our recent episode 74, A Chance to Do Better for First Episode Psychosis, about a promising public health approach to another urgent problem, first episode psychosis in young adults. That's it. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.